Hello, I'm Mike Harbath of Revenue Rocket, and welcome to this week's Shoot the Moon podcast. Revenue Rocket is the premier M&A and growth strategy advisor to IT services companies worldwide. And with me today are my partners, Matt Lockhart and Ryan Barnett. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, good morning, guys. We're jumping into a topic here today that we deal with day in and day out, and that's really we're going to frame up M&A deal structures. When you think about someone who's going to market or trying to sell their company, the number that you get at the end, that enterprise value, is really just the starting point of a discussion. So today, we really want to talk about the deal structures that are available and understand a few intricacies and nuances, but also understand some basic understanding. So we're seeing a use of equity, and we're seeing employment agreements and bonuses and all as part of a deal structure here today. And we all still understand that cash is king, and a lot of buyers simply want to take cash and take some chips off the table. At the same time, there's often opportunity that's in equity and in within earnouts that allows sellers to make more money and for buyers to leverage the transaction over time. So with that, I'd love to just start with some definition points, and I'll start over with you, Mike, if you could just help me understand some key things. So cash, I think we all get. So you see cash at close, that's simply a check that you're going to get when the transaction closes. Mike, another part, one thing that we see a lot of times is called a seller note. And can you just define, help me understand, what's a seller note?
Sure, absolutely. So a seller note, essentially as an owner of the business, when you sell the business, if you're going to issue a note, you're acting like the bank. So you're lending the buyer money that they're going to pay you over time. It's guaranteed. It's guaranteed generally by the assets of the business they're buying, in this case, your business. To have them pay you a note. Usually there's what we call a carrying cost to that note or interest that's paid to you. And that interest would be paid, just like they would pay it to a bank. It's typically simple interest. It usually comes, though, at a higher interest rate than a bank, right? Because, frankly, you're not a bank, and it's a higher risk scenario. We've seen interest rates offered by sellers, that are in the sort of six, anywhere from 2% to 10%. Many of them are in the 5-6% range. And they're basically can be paid monthly or quarterly or annually. And it's just a way for you to receive the money that's owed to you for acquiring your business over time by providing some financing to the buyer.
Mike, do most sellers, do they consider that a portion of cash? And perhaps I should, maybe I'd even have to ask this question a little differently. Is this what you consider, you mentioned earlier, a guaranteed form of payment? So cash, seller note is another guaranteed. What are there other forms of guaranteed payments?
Yeah, so a seller note is considered part of a guaranteed payment. It's not contingent upon the performance of the business, generally. Now, sometimes it has what we call a collar. And a collar might say that, hey, we're going to provide you a seller note, but the business we bought has to perform at some level. Otherwise, we don't owe you the money in the note. Depending on the negotiation and whether it makes sense or not, may or may not make sense to do that. Some people call that an earnout, but it's really not the same. Typically, earnout, we can talk about earnouts in a minute. We get more into that. But generally, it's considered to be guaranteed, a guaranteed component of consideration. And for the most part, cash and either stock in a publicly traded company or a seller note are as close to guaranteed consideration, I mean, are what is considered guaranteed consideration. We can talk about equity in a private corporation. That's not necessarily as guaranteed because we don't necessarily know, what's going to happen, right? You don't necessarily control that equity once you've sold. It's contingent upon another, you know, future event. Like oftentimes you'll hear, hey, we have a second bite at the apple because a private equity firm buys a company. You let equity ride. You convert it into the broader company's holdings at the private equity firm. And you're going to trust that that firm is going to sell that equity again sometime in the future, generally within 5 years or so. But oftentimes those decisions are out of your control. So if you roll equity, as it's called, in a private equity transaction, it's not like rolling equity in, that's public stock, right? Where you can, as I often say, sell enough equity, a small amount of equity, enough to remodel your kitchen, right? Can't really do that if you roll equity at a private equity firm or agree to transfer your equity to a broader private equity or broader firm. If you want more sort of insights on this and some of the nuance of it, you can listen to last week's podcast where we talked about mergers, because rolling equity is much more like a merger for that portion of the value.
Makes sense. And either of you could answer this question, but can you just help me just understand what, you know, equity is and what's it look like, especially when it comes to a deal consideration, and perhaps even the amount of equity that might be considered is a smart transaction for a seller based on their risk tolerance?
Yeah, I can weigh in on this one a little bit. You know, when you think about equity, it's the general value of your stock. So if you do a valuation of your business and the stock is, you know, most of our clients and most of the firms we work with have a limited number of equity partners or people that own the business. Could be one person, two, three, four, five, ten, you know, number of people that own equity in the business. That is the firm's stock, and that is the currency of the stock. And, you know, there's different ways to own equity. Typically, equity in a private company can be just owned based on what's called a simple interest, meaning you're a partner in that business. Or it could be as part of an employee stock ownership plan or an ESOP, where you own equity and you retain equity or you get equity units. In essence, when you go to sell your business, you're selling the stock of the business that's generally equated to its equity or the value of that stock. Now, when you sell the assets of a business, you essentially have a proxy for selling the equity is in the case that it becomes the same value. Right? So if you substantially sell all the assets of the business, you're selling the same value, you're just not selling the stock. And so there's some confusion about, well, what does that mean and how does it work and all that stuff. You would retain the stock, but you would have what's called a shell corporation. A shell corporation doesn't really have value. You've sold all of the assets out of it. So you can actually either sell the stock, which aligns to its equity value or the value in dollars, or you can sell the assets, which can be the same thing because you're ultimately selling out from outside of the stock shell all of the assets of the business.
That makes sense. Matt?
Oh, I don't have much to add there. I think that, you know, it offers an opportunity for us to sort of transition and talk about what the motivations are, right? What are the motivations and the different motivations for buyers versus sellers in, you know, managing these different types of deal structures, right? You know, it's super important. Yeah, Mike, you've seen, you know, more of this than really any of us here, but understanding the motivations of sellers is a key job of ours as an advisor. And, you know, some sellers are like, look, I just want to be done. You know, who knows? Maybe they've had a life event or, you know, or they're just tired and they don't have a lot of, you know, gas left in the tank. And so then working in kind of an earnout scenario is going to be pretty difficult. Conversely, if a buyer looks at the assets of the business as being, you know, really important, but maybe the acquiring firm's performance was, you know, a touch lagging. Well, then they're going to want to make sure that an earnout is in place to keep the acquiring firm's motivation as high as possible to assist in revving up the performance as the two firms get integrated. So, you know, Mike, you know, I know you know that deal structures are extremely important in creating that future value of the combined entity. What are some of the other motivations that are in place for a buyer or a seller?
Well, you know, there's all kinds of reasons why people might want to sell. Like, you know, and I think from a, we understand what the buyer's motivations are generally. I mean, I can sum those up. I think they're a little easier. Generally, they want to be bigger. They may want to get into a complementary area of the business by geography or service offering. They're looking to grow, and they have some available capital to invest, either through debt financing, which we like a lot for M&A, if the business case is there, or maybe cash on their balance sheet or some combination. And they're okay to take a little bit of risk to do that, right? As we all know, hiring is really hard right now, so there's a lot of buyers who are motivated to do acquisitions because it's difficult to hire qualified staff and grow. And that's a primary driver for a lot of acquisitions right now in, you know, IT professional services is, hey, we got to have smart people and we've got to grow our business. We got to be able to get these guys in here. We're going to have a hard time recruiting them away from wherever they are right now because the market's good and they're generally busy. So maybe we just need to pivot and acquire the business so that we can get that talent. And it's as much about a talent acquisition as it is about, you know, the overall value of the cash flows and the business in itself, I think right now, probably more than ever, at least in recent history. As far as sellers go, you know, there's a lot, you mentioned some of them, Matt, but some of the motivations are around, hey, we want to de-risk, right? We've worked in this business for a long time. We are all in. Generally, small business is the single largest asset the business owner has, far more than their home or anything else that they have in their portfolio. And they want to take some risk off the table, particularly as they get closer to retirement. Doesn't mean necessarily that they don't want to work anymore. They may want to continue to do what they're doing, exactly what they're doing. They want to do what I call selling in, right? And selling in means that you're going to now be doing what you're doing except for a different owner of that equity. And that can also flavor deal structures, right? Because you may be willing to take more risk in that scenario than you would if you were going to sell out or if you're looking to exit the business. And let's say you do want to retire. We have a client right now who plans to retire. They built a great business and they're selling it and they're going to do a orderly transition, but they're real excited about, you know, buying an RV and cruising around the country in it. And so that's what they're going to do. And they're able to do that and move on as part of their retirement plan. And that was a driver for them to sell their business. Sometimes people are tired. Sometimes sellers can't figure out how to get the business to the next level. This is not an uncommon scenario in IT services. People have a capacity to grow the business to a certain level. And once it gets to a certain level, if they can't add team members that can augment their skills, surround themselves with great people to grow, they can't get to the next level. And as a result, they get frustrated and oftentimes want to be part of something bigger, so they sell. Sometimes they have a life event. This is a real issue. We had a recent deal where we facilitated the sale of a company to someone who had, you know, stage 4 cancer, right? We've had several of those in our history, but we had one recently. And their motivation was to take care of their customers and take care of their family by selling their business while they frankly still could. And it was a decision that they could make. And so there's a variety of motivations for sellers. I think it's important for buyers and sellers to be very clear and transparent about their respective motivations and discuss that when they're vetting then the merits of a deal. Because to back to the main topic of this podcast is it will absolutely flavor the kinds of consideration that are used to fund the transaction. You know, whether it's predominantly cash or guarantee, whether there's earnouts, whether there's equity, whether that equity is public or private equity, all of those things are flavored, if you will, or sort of decided upon based on the motivations of the buyer and the seller.
That makes a lot of sense. And Matt, that was a really great question. I'd love to transition a little bit if we think about the structure of a deal overall. And oftentimes we think of this in terms of what we call enterprise value. So we make it just, and that's kind of the number of everything that's combined. And this goes into the structure. So oftentimes you'll see a deal that perhaps has a higher enterprise value that has more equity or more earnout potential with it. And it's oftentimes a very, you'll oftentimes see smaller enterprise values with more heavy cash deals. Mike, I'd love to get your perspective of, you know, what's in enterprise value? What should you include as a seller, and what should you be expecting for how to evaluate the final transaction and total enterprise value?
Yeah, it's interesting because there's a lot of discussions that go into, you know, what is enterprise value? How do we get there? What are the levers? You know, certainly, and we've talked about many times, the best way to enhance your enterprise value is to have solid growth in the business and have top quartile profitability in the business. The primary lever for enterprise value is profitability. Now, with that said, certainly deal structure impacts the enterprise value. To your point, if it's predominantly cash or all guaranteed, that enterprise value will be less than if it's all variable, all earnout, all future payment based on the company's performance in the future. And generally, you know, we've seen a lot more deals be more all guaranteed lately. I think predominantly because if you're a smart buyer, you want to buy right, which means you can do so or buy for a little less enterprise value if you do that. And if you're going to be successful, you know, obviously you're going to plan to be successful with this acquisition. And you know that you have confidence in your ability to execute, then you want to pay as little as possible for that company. So that's why an all cash deal makes sense, or an all guaranteed deal makes sense. At the same time, if you're concerned about your ability to execute post-transaction or the combination, or there's questions, you can add some variable consideration. But in an earnout, for example, a lot of people use earnouts to sort of hedge on risk. The challenge with that is the enterprise value goes up, the more the variable consideration, or what we'll call gain share sometimes, where everybody wins, right? The seller will win if there's gains, as will the buyer. But the enterprise value will be higher, generally higher to account for the risk. And what's fascinating, you know, based on some studies that we've seen and our own experience, is that earnouts generally get paid out at or above their index value over 86% of the time. So earnouts generally favor the seller. And so you should know that as a seller, right? Don't be afraid of earnouts. A lot of people are afraid, oh, earnouts don't get paid out or whatever. Earnouts that are structured properly, and this is where a solid M&A advisor can, you know, earn their weight, you know, earn their fees and are worth their weight in gold, if you will. They have to be structured properly. Otherwise, you do run the risk that your earnout won't get paid out, and even though you earned it. as a seller. And so really, really critical that you have people that are have been around and that can be looking out for your best interest by structuring those earnouts. So in general, you know, to kind of wrap this section up, if you were to look at the best way to enhance enterprise value vis-a-vis deal structure, there's the obvious things, which are, you know, be a healthy running business with profitability, give a baseline for enterprise value, but then be willing to take some risk associated with the deal structure, particularly if you're going to sell in and be part of the acquiring entity moving forward, because the likelihood that'll get paid out at or above the index value is pretty high.
Yeah, Mike. I mean, a quick note in another way to take risk is by, you know, asking for equity to be part of the transaction, rolling equity into the new firm as a seller. You know, if you believe in that the value of your firm, if you're a seller and you believe the value of your firm is going to enhance the value of the acquiring firm at a higher velocity, well, then, you know, that's a pretty good investment. Now, you got to believe in the leadership in the firm that is doing the acquisition, obviously. But, you know, that's another great way to take it and have a second bite at the apple, which is something that we talk to our sellers about frequently. And that's not a bad thing, you know, having that investment in place.
Yeah, for sure. And I, like we talked about earlier, you know, understanding the type of equity you're getting is important. Equity that's governed by the public markets is different than private equity or equity in a private firm. And so as long as you go in eyes wide open about what is that value of that equity and how do you value it and how can you value it and or exit the value of that equity in the future, and you're in alignment with now your partners in that business, because being an equity owner, you have partners, you're in good shape. And I think you just need to, you know, how those deals get structured and how do you de-risk that portion of the consideration is important. And making sure that you're in alignment with how you, in the end, get liquid on that equity, because liquidity, the whole reason you're betting on equity is that in the future, you'll be able to enhance its value and then get to a state of liquidity on it.
Yeah, that's great. Mike, you brought up the term private equity. I think it's maybe a something good to talk about for our potential sellers out there, and I know there are many, is, you know, right up front, you know, when you're thinking about the type of firm to sell to, you can start to make some general assumptions. And, you know, it happens sometimes when you make assumptions, but generally, right? So, for example, if you are going to sell to a private equity firm and your business is considered a key part of the platform, or it's potentially the platform, and they're looking at this as the foundation to build other acquisitions around and go to market, well, then you should expect that they want you to stick around for a good long time, if not the entire time that private equity firm is the majority stakeholder in the business, right? And so, you know, I think that, you know, bringing that up versus if it is a large strategic acquisition, oftentimes, and it's a much larger firm that's buying a smaller firm, oftentimes a fully cash and or near cash consideration is going to be, you know, potentially more applicable or more likely. And then there's a variety of in between, Mike, that I'm sure you can comment on. But I thought it's helpful because, you know, oftentimes we start talking to firms that, you know, they've grown wonderful businesses over, you know, a decade or two, and they're, you know, they've created these firms that are $50 million in revenue, and so they're very successful business people, but they haven't ever gone through the process of selling their company, and they just don't know the environment. Mike, what have you seen?
Yeah, I would agree in that, and I think, you know, private equity is an interesting topic because they have evolved. If you were to ask me, you know, is private equity a good choice for you to sell your business into 10 years ago, I would say generally not. If you would ask me today, I would say I would be 180 degrees on the other end of it and say generally so, primarily because private equity acts like a strategic buyer. They have operating partners typically now that understand the business. Our industry is much more mature, so they're operating these portfolio businesses in such a way that they're much more, they might look much more like a strategic business. And if they buy you and use you as a platform or as a tuck-in, they're thinking and operating the business like a strategic operator. And in many cases, we've seen these guys pay up and pay more than market enterprise value for deals. So kind of some of the mindset about private equity you've had in the past may not be applicable today. And I would be open to those conversations if they occur.
Totally. Really good point, Mike. Hey, Mike, one thing, and Ryan, you know, one of the things that, in a deal structure that we haven't talked about because, you know, it's not a merger or an acquisition, but it's a, you know, a management buyout. And, you know, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't discuss real quickly the opportunity for a management buyout. Well, I thought Mike or Ryan might talk about it, but in essence, yep. Right, there is another opportunity for a primary private stakeholder, which is, and they believe in their management team and they really want to keep the fundamental vision and structure of their business in place. And that is, right, to offer the opportunity to sell their business over time, typically, to the key leadership that oftentimes is a minority shareholder in the business. And you know, what is the structure of that? Again, it typically is over time because you're going to be using cash flow as a means of for the management team to be acquiring the firm over time from an exiting, you know, primary partner. Mike, I don't know if you have any additional thoughts.
Yeah, I certainly do, man. I apologize for the delay there. I was wasn't fast enough on the mute button. Here's a comment I would make on partner buyouts, or minority partner buyouts. Oftentimes, those are a great strategy, particularly if you want to invest in your team and your employees over time. And as long as you're willing to take a protracted buyout timeline, generally, that's a good strategy. And for a lot of people who retire, that is a good strategy. They can still make themselves kind of available to the business. They can be available to provide advice and counsel as a board member. They're sort of at arm's length, and they let their partners or former partners run the business. And they can get bought out over time. And it's generally a trusted relationship. And I think because of that, you can be in a position to facilitate it. Now, it comes with some risk, right? It comes with some challenges that you need to be prepared for. Typically, when someone does a management buyout, it's not like selling your business in that sometimes those buyout timelines can be 10 or more years, right, for fair value at the time to get paid out. Sometimes those employees will not run the business the way you ran the business. So they, in theory, could create some downward pressure on the growth of the business based on their own bias and skills, and thus put your buyout at risk. It's not guaranteed It is risk. It's like an all earnout deal, which should come at a premium. And I've seen more management buyouts not be able to get negotiated or fail after they were initiated, frankly, than I've seen be successful. And the reason that is has a lot to do with structuring and has a lot to do with commitment. Now, we've certainly seen them be successful, so I don't want to make that sound like it's not a possibility. But generally, a best practice is to make sure that that employee who's buying equity, who's going to be a minority partner, becoming the majority operating partner, has skin in the game. And that skin in the game generally means that they've gone and gotten a loan to buy your equity out or a big portion of your equity, and that the balance of that equity is paid out over time. Because that allows you as a seller to de-risk, and it allows them to also have other folks that they need to be accountable to, aka the bank, to be able to make sure they're operating the business well. And it still gives you an opportunity to provide advice and counsel. And so that would be my two cents on that, Ryan.
Makes a ton of sense. Mike, I really appreciate, you know, if we look at all these deal structures, there's a lot to think about. Any advice to someone who's considering this as involving a third party in evaluating?
Well, you know, for sure, I think you have to have the experienced, you know, back to it sounds like we play a commercial on every podcast about Revenue Rocket, but, you know, back to, you know, you need an advisor, a third party advisor who can help you structure a deal where you're not at risk. So you get paid out for the fair value of your business if you're selling or if you're buying, right? If you're buying, that you're putting the deals together properly with these different currencies in an M&A transaction. You know, M&A has been called the most unnatural act in business for a reason. There's a lot of nuance and complexity associated with putting these deals together. It's not water off a duck's back easy, as some people think. And I think by hiring a competent advisor, and there's many of them out there that can help you through this journey of either buying or selling a firm and using the right currencies in the transaction, you can ultimately be successful in getting the deal done, and you can reach your investment goals if you're the buyer and get paid out if you're the seller in the end, which is the ultimate goal.
Makes sense, Mike. I appreciate it. I'll turn it back to you to hand us on out.
Sounds great. And with that, we're going to tie a ribbon on it. We wish you all a great fall and hope that you tune into next week's podcast, where we'll be sharing more insight and wisdom about IT services growth strategies and M&A. Take care and be safe.